Are you interested in learning more about how to start your Salesforce career? Be sure to register for our next live webinar showing you exactly how the Salesforce Career Development Program works, our latest statistics, and up-to-date information about what's going on in the Salesforce ecosystem. To register now, head over to talentstacker.com/live. That's talentstacker.com/LIVE. We look forward to seeing you on the next live webinar.
Wait, so how many certs do you have?
One.
Are you serious?
One certification.
Dang, you didn't even break down and get the AI cert when it came out?
Nope.
Hi, I'm Anita Smith.
I'm Bradley Rice.
And you're listening to the Salesforce for Everyone podcast.
In today's show, we dive into the story of how one person reached double six figures by working in Salesforce.
Not once did I get a significant raise where they just came to me and said, hey, you're doing a great job. I want to give you $10,000 more.
Also, we discuss how being a part of the ecosystem can boost your lifelong learning.
I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to always continue my career in education and realized, well, I just love the education portion of it. How can I do it a little bit differently?
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Salesforce for Everyone podcast. In today's episode, I think the audience is going to be relatively interested because we're going to be talking a lot about income and really focused on high-end income potentials for Salesforce professionals and where you start, how you get there, and what goes into going from entry level, just breaking into your first job, to finding yourself in a place where our guest today has found themselves. And with me today to help cover this topic, as always, is Anita Smith. How's it going, Anita?
Hey, going pretty well. For anyone who's following along, house updates, garden is coming along. Things are springing up. Yeah, just excited about my trips in the upcoming year. How about you?
Yeah, you're always traveling, staying busy. It's awesome. Since I've known you, you have been an avid traveler. So it's always cool to see what you're up to next. For me, not so much. We are, I think, really just chilling a little bit. Evelyn is doing homeschool, so we're still getting into routine with that. And our other child, my wife's brother, lives with us. And so he is back in public school. So it's been fun to help him out, fun in maybe the most sarcastic way, with Algebra 2 and chemistry. I'm getting to go back through again. So it is not my strong suit, but I'm working it out. So it's definitely been a challenge, but it's also fun to work with him and try to get him through this thing we call high school. So yeah, that's what we've been up to, really.
Is that reflected in his grades? Are you just helping him get C's?
I mean, honestly, yeah.
No comment. Okay. You know, I'm sorry.
Let's just say we're not one of those A+ households. It's very much learn the things that hopefully you can use in your future. We're much more like inspired learning. So if he wants to learn Salesforce or if he wants to learn how to start a small business, but his grades maybe aren't all A's while he's learning those things, we're pretty balanced when it comes to that kind of stuff.
That's nice. I grew up in an Asian immigrant household, so completely different outlook on grades. Anyways, should we go ahead and get started?
I guess so. We may as well.
Yeah, I wanted to introduce our guest today, who I don't really know much about except that he is Salary Goals. Welcome to the show, Trevor Krieg. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to getting into it.
All right. Awesome. Well, let's kick things off. And I think really what people, given the intro to the episode, people are probably interested in what we're talking about here. Like, because to different people, the perspective is different, right? You know, to a lot of people, $100,000 is an incredible money. And I would probably be in that ballpark to say, like, man, if you make six figures, then you're probably doing all right. But if you don't mind sharing with us, you know, and we'll get into the details of how we get to this point, because I think that's what the listeners are going to want to know. But if you don't mind just sharing ballpark, you know, what are you making at your day job? What kind of job is it? Are you making any money outside of your day job and about how much that is? So we can just get a feel for what are we talking about here when we talk about high income earning Salesforce professionals?
Yeah, let's rip off the Band-Aid. High level, we are sitting at low 200s for income for W-2s. And then for, you know, take home on the side jobs, it can range anywhere from $80 an hour to $200 an hour, depending on the work.
Sure.
So you kind of put in what you want to put in. But yeah, W-2's primary focus, then helping people out as they need it.
Yeah, that's excellent. So I think a lot of people, when they hear those numbers, you know, I think most people are going to go, what? Like, how do you get to double six figure in a W-2 job, right? Like, leave the 1099 side hustle income on the side, because everybody can adjust that to their liking, right? If they like working 80-hour weeks, they can work 80-hour weeks and do a lot on the side. If they prefer closer to that, you know, 40, 50-hour week, then there's not going to be a lot of room for that. So I think that sets us up for just, you know, what you can expect. But at the same time, I don't want to set the expectation that you're just going to walk into a Salesforce career and make $200,000. There's plenty of salary surveys out there. Assume that they're within some kind of margin, right? Let's call them 20% too high or 20% too low, you know, but we're in the ballpark when we look at those salary surveys. But none of them are really saying a lot of people are out there making double six-figure income at their job. So we know it happens though, right? Like, we know it happens quite, I was one of those people, right? Like, I was making double six figures working my typical work week, which was less than 40 hours a week. So those individuals are there, but it's not necessarily commonplace. And I would argue that, you know, probably the average person 10 years into their career, which is about where you're at, if I recall after checking out LinkedIn, you know, 10 plus, a little over 10, most people I'd say are around that 150,000 ballpark, 130, 170, right in there somewhere. So where do we begin here? Like, how did you get started with your Salesforce career? Was it the typical, you know, hop in, learned about Trailhead, that kind of thing? Or did you find yourself accidental admin? Or, you know, how did it all begin?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny story. It was a little bit between Trailhead and accidental admin, I'd say. I was working for a company at the time, Fortune 100, and they were using a custom-built CRM. Salesforce was the cool new thing on the block, and they needed some people that understood not only the business side, but also the technical back end. And my boss had put me up for the role. They said, hey, you got to hop on Trailhead. This is what you'll be doing. And I interviewed for it and got the position. And that's really how I started. And I couldn't be more thankful for them switching over to Salesforce.
That's awesome. So it looks like you're, I guess, voluntold maybe to make the switch, but were you working in tech prior or were you doing other things at the company?
So I was in sales and business administration. So we had a custom CRM that wasn't great, as most custom CRMs aren't. And, you know, I understood the technical requirements that a CRM needs to generate good information. But I think what put me aside was understanding what the business needs were as well. And I think, as any good admin does, they understand the needs of the user. And I think that's what set me aside and really kind of shot me forward in a great trajectory for my Salesforce career. And yeah, it was very lucky, but it's not all about luck. I remember having to, you know, study for weeks and weeks and weeks just for the interview to be considered for the admin position. And at the time, if I recall back, because Bradley had sent me a message recently kind of about my career path, I'd look back on it and it was a Salesforce subject matter expert was the original title. Didn't even have admin in the title. And I was thrilled to even be considered for it.
That's really interesting because what you mentioned there as you finished off, and I want to touch on a couple of things, but it's funny because you mentioned that title, Salesforce Subject Matter Expert. And at Talent Stacker, we've been, I won't say studying, but I'll say we've been analyzing a lot of the data around job titles recently, especially I'll say since about summer 2023, we've really been looking at the names of these job titles because historically, if you look back, say, you know, 10 years, 5 years even, a lot of times the divide was pretty straightforward. It was like Salesforce administrator, Salesforce developer, maybe some business analysts, Salesforce roles. If you got into consulting, you'd have architect roles and project managers and things like that. But we've seen a lot more granularity in the naming of Salesforce roles and a lot more diversity, I'll say. And I recall, because it's fresh on my mind, we did the numbers for this past month and we had just over 20 people landed jobs, but there were 17 different titles out of those 20 people. And so all that to say, like, it's so funny because Salesforce subject matter expert is never something I would search. But the reality is, like, today, especially in 2024 now, you have got to be open to more than just that Salesforce admin, Salesforce developer, Salesforce business analyst. Like, the naming for these roles is wild. So it's all about that specific business and what their exact titling is. And I think some of this comes from, You know, pre-2023, I would say that most of the hiring we saw entry level was consultants. It was all junior consultants, associate consultants, a lot of it, more than 60%. And a lot of their naming conventions are structured. It's like, we have these five roles and this is what people do at our company. And across consultancies, those tend to be similar. But now that we're seeing a shift 2023 forward, where now the majority of the roles are internal at companies, the actual customers of Salesforce, now you're not seeing that structured naming convention. And it's totally based on what those internal companies call that role, where they need somebody with Salesforce expertise to come in and do things. So I think that's interesting. A couple of things I wanted to draw attention to for the listeners is, you mentioned that it had a lot to do with your expertise on the business and the needs of the users. And I wanted to call out that specific. I've seen that a lot in interviews lately, where individuals are so hyper-focused on their Salesforce certifications, trailhead experience, what they've done on a project for, you know, using Salesforce. And they're talking about functionality, functionality, functionality. And that can almost become a little bit boring, especially for a non-technical interviewer that's like, I don't know what you're talking about, but can you talk to me about the needs of our business? Can you talk to me about what you know about our company and what you think our end users would be doing and why your skills translate into making their lives better? So I think that's a really important call out. So if you don't mind, I would love to take sort of an aside and get your opinion on what I'll call sort of like the great debate in the Salesforce ecosystem. And that's around, what do you feel has been most important in your career? Is it certifications? Because I mean, if you ask an entry-level person what's going to be the most important thing, they're going to say certs or experience. And we see it all the time. So I'd love to get your take, Trevor, on, is it certs? Is it experience? Is it something totally different that you've been able to activate these skills or these talents and get yourself to the point where you're at today?
Yeah, that's a great question, Brad. I do want to touch on one thing that you were kind of mentioning during this intro, is at the start of my career, I got really hung up on the title. And if people get fixated on the title, they could be missing those opportunities. Because like you said, most of them are going to be internal promotions. People have set job descriptions, but that job description for an SME was the exact same job description that I had when I got over to an admin certification. So not focusing on the minor details, especially when you're first starting, get your foot in the door, prove that you can do the work, was something that really helped me set myself apart from others looking for the same role. Going back to the certifications, I do think they're important, but not all companies are going to require it. You get to a point where the level that I'm at right now, I don't think I've been asked about a certification in the last 2 or 3 years. But when you're first starting, even a general admin certification is important, just because you don't have the work history to demonstrate that you have the ability. So having even just one certification under your belt gives that person that doesn't have that technical knowledge that resource to let you know, okay, yeah, this person can do the job. I think they're going to be the right fit. So for me, it's more about experience. But at the end of the day, one certification I feel like is the minimum.
Wait, so how many certs do you have?
One.
Are you serious?
One certification.
Dang, you didn't even break down and get the AI cert when it came out?
Nope. I went to the AI Dreamforce, had a blast. I've always had them, you know, lined up to take the test, and then work has taken priority, life has taken a priority, and in all honesty, I let my work speak for itself.
Wow. So you've been in the ecosystem 10 years, one cert. I'm so impressed. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard work though. I mean, my example is not going to fit most people, but at the same time, you don't have to just stack certs with no experience.
Yeah, I think it's I'll say I followed a similar path. My experience was similar. And I heard something you said there where you said you'd let the work speak for itself. And then there's an aside there that I want to make sure the audience picked up on. You said something about family. And what I want to hinge on there is that there were other priorities, right? There were, and everybody's different. And like you said, you know, your story might work for some people. It may not work for other people like me. I got I think I had about 4 certifications when I was at like the height of my career. I got my 5th because somebody had a free certification voucher and said, do you want it? And I said, sure. And so I took a test and I probably studied like 10 or 15 hours and went and took the test and then passed it. And really looking back, I don't know if I would do that again because I don't really know what that 10 or 15 hours got for me or sitting down to take the test or that time away from family to get that additional cert. So I think if the certifications, and this really goes for, I'll totally agree with you that if you're entry level, the certifications are going to be a big part of what allows employers to know that you have a tangible skill, that you're making moves in the direction of focusing on Salesforce. We all know, I know what a lot of the professionals out there are thinking, and it's, yes, if you work for a consultancy and they're a Salesforce partner, that the certifications count towards the partner score and all those things. So it can make you more appealing to consultancies. And typically they will pay you or pay for the certifications and then allot you time to get those because it's beneficial to them. So there are caveats, but I think speaking directly to how does anyone take it into their own hands to advance their own career and where this plays into it? And for me, it was basically like, is it inhibiting me from getting my next client? Do I have clients? Do I have employers saying, no thanks, Brad. We were really looking for this certification or that certification, and that would have made the difference. Hands down, I'd be out there getting that certification. But I'm betting with Trevor's experience and my experience was that that never happened. It literally never happened. So there never came a time where I said, I need to go get this certification. I need to go get these, go on this architecture pathway. And I think some people love the certifications. It's fun. It's a game. It gives them a challenge to look for on the horizon and they enjoy the process. Awesome. Go after it. But I'll agree that if you think the next certification is going to be the difference between getting the job and not getting the job, then odds are there are things you could be doing that are more effective than sitting on Trailhead and trying to pass another multiple choice test. So I would totally agree across the board there. And I think that's really interesting. And while the path may not be for everybody, I think it is for a lot of people. But we get so focused because if we get on LinkedIn or really even like Salesforce Twitter or Salesforce Reddit or anything in between, like 70% of the questions are about certifications. And 70% of the companies that do Salesforce training are specific to certifications. And it gets really confusing as a Salesforce professional. How are we supposed to advance ourselves if not with another certification? Like, what are we even supposed to do? So I would love to have your take on that, Trevor. Like, what are we supposed to do, right? Like, what would be your advice for, all right, so it's not a cert, then what is it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for me, I still use the information that people studied for to take their tests. So, you know, Trailhead, I use that, I wouldn't say every day, but pretty close to it. Whether it's jogging in memory to find a specific SQL query that I need to pull or something new for AI that I want to integrate into our system, I'm still utilizing all those tools that is going to prepare somebody to take that test. But there's also the experience that is much more important to me that is going to actually demonstrate my knowledge versus picking a multiple choice question. I'm a little biased. I don't like tests, never been great at them. But at the same time, they have their place. And when you're getting your foot in the door, getting at least one cert is a great starting path. But I had colleagues that took the admin test a couple times and failed, and they were outstanding admins. You can't get yourself down just because you failed your first time. So for me, it's more about experiencing and also how to utilize the tools that you have at hand. Everything that I've used for the most part has been free. And I think that's why I've really fallen in love with Salesforce. I mean, I spent hundreds of thousands of dollars getting a bachelor's and master's and trying to always continue my career in education. And then I took a step back and realized, well, I just love the education portion of it. How can I do it a little bit differently? And that's what really made me fall in love with Salesforce is it's always evolving and changing. You can't just take one test or get one job and then sit back and say, I got this. You always have to continue to challenge yourself in the Salesforce ecospace or you will be left behind.
Good answer. Doesn't like tests, probably grew up in a Bradley household. Complete opposite from me. Although I do agree experience is better than exams and certs, but nowadays it's harder to break into than, you know, 10 years ago. I want to circle back to, you mentioned your first Salesforce job title was a Salesforce SME. Can you walk me through your career and all the different titles? Just because, like, I don't even know all the different titles that are out there. So I'm always learning something new. Not that I'm looking for a new job at all, in case my boss is listening.
Yeah, absolutely. I had to pull up an old resume and my LinkedIn profile to kind of go through all of the titles. But yeah, started out as a Salesforce SME and progressed from there into a client manager hyphen Salesforce. That was an interesting one for me. So still focused on the customer, but handling all of the tickets that were inbound for our current system. And then it transitioned into Salesforce hyphen aerospace and defense contracting, and then lead Salesforce support. And then after that, I finally landed my first Salesforce administrator position. And so that was 2 years into my career. And I like to call out that date because at that point in my career, I was just overjoyed that I had found my niche. I had found something that not only I love what I do, but it continued to challenge me. And for me, the being challenged in my job was always a very big driving force to me. So after that, it went to Salesforce administrator / app builder, because at the time we had just switched over from a custom CRM into Salesforce. And so they needed a lot of custom integrations that weren't out of the box at that time. Then I went to lead Salesforce administrator. From there, I spent about 8 months in that position. Then senior Salesforce administrator, back to developer, and then back to senior Salesforce administrator and project manager. And then from there, for the last 4 years, it's been Salesforce solutions architect. So a lot of back and forth. And again, I know that I brought it up a few times already, but do not get hung up on the title. Focus on what the job requirements are, because a lot of these overlap. It's totally up to the company on what they put within that job description. It's not just a set script.
I want to play a game. Bradley, I saw you taking notes too. Can we guess at what point he hit the first six figures? And then at what point the double six figures? If you're okay with us playing this game, Shepard.
We can play this game. I've got so many questions based on what we just went through, but yes, we can play that game. I would ask first, can I have like one helpful hint as we go to help? How many different companies did you work for from first Salesforce job to current Salesforce job? How many companies does that entail?
5, but multiple consulting gigs.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm guessing that we made it to six figures on like company number 3 is how I want to frame it. It's like, I bet the second company probably jumped from like, I will say, Trevor, what was your first, if you don't mind sharing, ballpark or exact number, whatever you feel comfortable with, first company, first Salesforce job, what were you making in that role?
53,000.
All right.
I had to look back on it, and it was a good time to kind of sit back and reminisce with the wife this morning on that.
Yeah, that's so cool. My first Salesforce job was 32,000. And Anita, we know yours was six figures.
Six figures.
Congratulations.
Yeah, okay.
let's play this game with Anita. It's her first and current role. All right. So I'm betting it was company number 3. I don't know when all the title changes occurred, but I'm betting went from like 53, and then you would job hop for like, dang, I can't believe I'm making like 75. And then the next one is like, wow, I did it. I hit the six figure mark. This is insane. So that's going to be my guess. What about you?
My guess is the lead Salesforce admin role.
Okay. Maybe you could line those up for us, Trevor.
Yeah, you were both pretty close. So when I did break that first six figure mark, it was that senior Salesforce administrator role, and that was on company 3.
Dang it, that was my first guess.
Oh. Yeah, and it was a big hop. It went from, since we were looking it over recently with my wife, it was, I think, 53, and then I stayed in the 60 range for a while, then got a big bump to around 90, and then jumped into, I think it was 102, was that big bump into that senior administration role.
Nice.
All right. So you've shared a few numbers. Do you mind just sort of like jogging us on that progression? So you start at 53. How the heck do we get to 200? Like, how does that progression happen?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't planned. You know, at the time, a lot of that was driven through kind of what we needed financially and kind of where we wanted to be as a family. You know, at the time, my wife and I we didn't have a child. We didn't have a mortgage. We were living in an apartment and we were just enjoying life and didn't have a lot of those financial, I wouldn't call them constraints, but we didn't have those obligations. I guess that's a better way to say it. And those progressions, those smaller progressions, I say small, but at the time they were massive. So please keep in mind that looking back at your career, you have to remember that they are massive at the time. But those 5K, 10K bumps were very substantial for us at the time because it was never money that we were counting on. You know, 10 years ago, Salesforce had been around for a while, but it really hadn't gained a ton of popularity or like a cult following like it does now. And so there wasn't really a ton of information around what others were making as I was still fairly new to it. Those other bumps really came from me doing my due diligence on saying, hey, this is what I'm doing in my day to day. This person has a totally different title and a completely different salary. How do I get there? You know, I was talking with a colleague the other day and he brought up a term that I really resonated with me was kind of like that imposter syndrome, right? You get into a position where you feel very excited, but you're not really sure if you can handle it. But having that confidence behind yourself, and you need to be the one that's driving that. It can't be your boss or your job itself. You need to be the one that has to advocate for yourself. Not once did I get a significant raise where they just came to me and said, hey, you're doing a great job. I want to give you $10,000 more. I always had to do the work and I always had to advocate for myself. And I didn't get it on the first try. You know, you really have to push back and sometimes you have to stand your ground and worst case scenario, you might have to job hop. But having that confidence in your ability and having that confidence to know what you're worth played a massive role into the progression of my salary personally.
How many years in until you gained that confidence to start negotiating your salary?
That's a tough one because I think all contract negotiations are difficult no matter what position you're in. I had my yearly contract review this quarter and I still felt nervous asking for a raise, even though I knew that it was deserved. I knew that I could handle it with the extra job commitments. So I would be reluctant to say never, but at the same time, I always try to let my work speak for itself. If you ever get nervous or kind of have that self-doubt or imposter syndrome creep back in, you know, look back at the work and accomplishments that you've made, and that should be the driving force behind it and allow you to advocate for yourself.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. I think if anyone didn't hear that, that's it, right? Like when you're negotiating for a raise, it is documenting your accomplishments, your work, how you've grown, how you're impacting the company. Because like, once again, especially if you're not in a consulting role and you walk in and you say, hey, I think I deserve a $10,000 raise because I got my, you know, PD1 certification. And it's like, okay, like, cool, you got a cert. Like, did you impact our business, right? Like, did you go above and beyond? Did you even meet your regular expectations that you think you deserve more? And I'll say, Anita's really good at this because, number one, she's done salary negotiation like templates and coaching inside a Talent Stacker. And she hit me with one of these salary negotiation templates one time. And it was, I'll tell you, it was enlightening. And I felt a little bad after I got it. And the reason I felt bad is because I am working too, right? Like we're both working. And I think you have to keep this in mind as an employee, as an employer, is that if you're going to your employer as the employee, they're working too. I mean, hopefully, and they're putting in those long weeks and they're putting in those hard hours and they have priorities and projects. And especially if they're managing multiple people, they, a lot of times, you know, and you can fault them and that's okay. I definitely faulted myself for this. They don't realize, especially if you're talking about an annual review, man, there is so many projects and tasks and ideas and innovations and just things that get done over the course of a year. It's incredible. And so Anita actually presented me with an entire year of these are the things I've worked on. These are the initiatives I've been part of. These are the impacts I've had on the business as things have changed over time. And man, looking over the list, it was like, holy smokes, like touching almost every avenue of our business and how we work and how we operate. And it was like, well, God, I can't say no to this. Like, give me a break. So I think if you can hit an employer and make them feel that way, but that is up to you to do for the last 12 months, right? Because if you operate for 12 months and you're trying to be comfy and you're trying to be cozy and you're trying to take off early and take long lunches and start late and end early and all the things, that's cool too. But don't think that an extra year of experience is going to get you a raise just because. Like, it does take effort. It does take accomplishment. It's probably not going to be you listing out how many certs you got or how many courses you took. They want to see that translated to improvements to the business. And a lot of times, again, just keep a journal. I know we advocate for this. I know we've said it on the show before, but keep a journal. And if you're looking for a journal and what a journal like that looks like, just go to talentstacker.com/toolkit. And there's a free journal inside that toolkit. And I believe there's also a negotiation template. So you can find both those there. So I would definitely check those out, but journal. And the reason I say that is because if you just keep like a monthly, here's what I'm up to, this is what I'm working on, this is what I did, this is what I did great at, this is what I feel like I sucked at, and you keep up with that for 12 months and you do it monthly, that is going to be your negotiation review right there. It's going to be listing out everything that you've already documented. So Anita, it looked like you might want to jump in here.
I have a really funny story. So this year is the first time I'm actually, you know, doing daily journals, and then I wrap it up in the week and wrap it in a month. I plan on wrapping up like quarterly to make it easier. So I found an old journal. I only remembered to do it on one day, January 1st. I've been trying to follow your journal advice since I started my career. And 3 years later, I finally got it. So thank you.
That's awesome. So, I mean, it is really funny. I'm hit or miss with the journals too. It's like, what do they say? Like, when you can't do, teach. So I'm just going to sit here and teach, and don't ask me for a copy of my journal right now. One thing I wanted to point on, or like hit on, Trevor, there's a few things. I've got a list here. All the roles, you know, I remember, I mean, this was 10 plus years ago now, but man, when I was starting my career, I was so worried about leaving companies before I'd worked there for like 5 years, right? Because there was all this advice I got, admittedly from my parents, who are, I don't know how old now, older, right? Like 60s. And they had given me this advice that, and I heard this a lot from college professors, I heard it from teachers, high school counselors, parents of other friends, you know, you can't leave a company if you haven't been there at least a few years. It's going to show issues with loyalty. It's going to show issues with your sticking ability, your dedication, nobody wants to hire somebody who leaves every year, every 2 years, even every 3 years is a bit of a stretch, right? Would you say, for me, the answer is no, but I would like to hear your perspective. Has job hopping, let's just call it that, I know some people don't love that term, has leaving an employer and going to a new one and that showing up on your resume, has that come up? Has that impacted you that you're aware of?
Yes and no. You know, one of the hardest questions for me, whether you've enjoyed previous employers or not, is, you know, why are you making that transition? You know, and really trying to internalize that and not put it on the company has been very helpful. But for me, I'm kind of, you know, split down the middle with it. I think that personally, I like to stay with a company for at least a year just to demonstrate consistency. But there has been times in the past where it's been 16 months, 18 months, and then I'm just not getting what I need out of the role. But it can't just be financial. Money's always going to come. Money's always going to go. As long as you're making the jump for the right reasons, I think would take priority over, hey, this job is going to offer me 10K more versus staying with a role and trying to challenge yourself a little bit more on the business acclimate versus, like you said, job hopping from one place to another to gain 5 or 10K. Now, if you're getting poached by another company and they're offering you $20,000, $30,000 more, that's a different story, right? That's a substantial amount of money that you're probably not going to get within the next year or two at your current company. But don't write them off. Have those conversations, even if they're difficult, even if they're uncomfortable. I've always tried to be very open with my employers, and that's benefited me quite a bit.
All right. So we've covered a lot of information here. I think a lot of great information. So I hope the audience is hanging in and going like, wow, this is a lot going on. But I'll say for myself, I'm hearing this conversation, I'm thinking about the audience, and it's excellent. I'm seeing the career progression, how we get from entry level to these incredible salary jumps to all these different job titles and opportunities and taking advantage of opportunities when they come. And maybe certifications aren't everything, but if I like certifications, then they can be part of my journey if I want them to be. So I still don't understand how we got to this double six-figure income, right? Like there's something missing as we try to round out this story, because I know there are definitely listeners out there. I've got a lot of friends in this space where, look, I've been a consultant. I've been an admin. I've been a developer. I've done this stuff for 10 years and I'm not at 200,000. And I don't necessarily see a path to be at 200,000 if I stay where I'm at, or even, I don't know what a job to apply for to try to get there. Is it like, you know, FANG companies? Do I have to go work for Google or Meta? Or like, what do I have to do to make this a reality in my life? So Trevor, if you wouldn't mind taking us down that path to, I won't say the finish line, but I'll say where you are in the journey right now. How did you get to that point that made that difference, that flipped that switch, that made you go from, yeah, I'll probably make about 150K to I can make even more than 150K? How do we get to that point?
Yeah, it's funny that you say kind of like flip the switch or flip the script, because I didn't even know that it was possible at the time, you know, loving what I do, enjoying the job, enjoying the people. And then with consulting and just kind of continuing to expand my network of people I communicate with, like you, Brad, you know, finding that niche that really need a really well-rounded admin, developer, solutions architect, whatever you may be, finding those people that, whether it's a startup, or for me, it was a startup and a cybersecurity company, they're incredibly security focused. I mean, we work with Fortune 25 customers all the time. You know, we're the only open NDR source program right now. And finding those companies that are willing to pay maybe even above market to get that top tier of employee, you know, it's not easy, but there are plenty out there. Also, getting into kind of how you can use different companies and their locations, they're going to pay different amounts depending on where you're at. So make sure that you're not just focusing on the companies within your state. Expanding your scope, expanding your reach is really going to help get you to that next level. And for me, it was the combination of both, you know, making sure that I'm expanding my scope, opening myself up to different opportunities. And then for me, it was a company that reached out to me directly, gave me a giant list of, you know, what they wanted for a solutions architect. You know, I had about 90% of those. The rest 10%, I said, okay, I can learn or I can figure out. That's what got me into that double six-figure range and not selling yourself short.
So somewhere earlier in our conversation, you alluded to maybe some side gigs or freelancing. Can you tell me more about that and how does someone get started? Because a lot of people listening would love to make double six figures, you know, cool quarter million, no problem.
Yeah, it seems crazy when you say it out loud. So keep in mind that even when you're, you know, at that range, it's still a crazy amount of money to think about. But yeah, getting into that was a very interesting scenario for me when I did leave my very first company to further my career. They were bummed that I left. But being able to continue to maintain that relationship with them, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 months down the road, I got a call from them. And, you know, I thought it was just them catching up, wanted to see how things were going. Because again, when I ended terms with them, they were upset, but they were also happy for me because I really put that effort into the company and it wasn't just a 9-to-5 for me. So they said, hey, would you ever be interested in consulting? And at the time, I didn't know what that meant or what that looked like. So, you know, you really have to do your due diligence and it's okay to be honest. And that's exactly what I said to them. I said, I would love to do that, but I don't even know where to start. And so using the different Salesforce communities, really helped me learn how to set up an LLC, how to run, work through that, and build my consulting group. And all of my clients that I've worked with in the past have been previous employers that I've worked for, or they have been friends with previous employers that I've worked for. So there was only one consulting gig where I went out of my way to look for it. And it was an opportunity that I saw through the Salesforce community that somebody didn't have the bandwidth to take. It was a 3-month contract. They needed help setting up a small Salesforce instance and, you know, just making sure that you're always keeping your eyes open for those opportunities, no matter how small they are. Don't get hung up on a 1-month contract. It's not going to benefit you. You really need to get out of that mindset, because all of those small contracts, they're only building you up to greater things.
Yeah, I want to call out a theme across the last two things you talked about, Trevor. And so that's freelance clients, all the way back to how do you get into a niche to get to double six figures? And a theme across that was, you could call it network or you could call it community. It's either one, it's a little bit of both. And this is really an important aspect, because when you're talking about moving, getting freelance clients from previous employers, your work ethic at that previous employer had to be spot on. Your relationship, not just your work, but the relationship, the communication, the actual bond that you built with those individuals, so that they'll DM you, they'll text you, they'll call you, and they'll say, hey, Trevor, I know we did some work together. Just wanted to give you an update. Like, how many people are ex-employers actually willing to call? And it's not a whole lot. But when you actually develop relationships, those are calls that they're willing to make. I got my first client through a Facebook message on Messenger from a guy who worked for, I didn't even work with him. He was just in marketing at the company. And he said, hey, Brad, I'm in marketing. You don't know me, but a lot of your work impacted my work. And I know you as sort of the Salesforce guy internally, and we need help, right? And you've been gone for a year, I know, but we need help. That contract turned into, I believe, over 4 years, about $300,000 in side work, right? So it was huge. And it gave me a foundation for my freelancing career. The other thing you mentioned was getting to double six figures through niching into, say, a cybersecurity startup, right? Like, well, how do I find a cybersecurity startup? Wrong question. Like, wrong question. It's about having the network, the community, and the guidance. And something that has stood out to me throughout this process of like building Talent Stacker and this conversation is, if you are looking to level up and progress yourself in any way, whether it's because you're currently washing dishes and you want to be a Salesforce admin or developer, or it's because you're currently making 70K and you want to make 100K, or you're currently making 100K and you want to make 200K, you have to take your advice from people who have accomplished what you're looking to accomplish. And that's so obvious, but I've seen it over and over again, where somebody says, I'm struggling to pass the Salesforce admin exam. And they take advice from people who continually fail the Salesforce admin exam. Or they say, I want to land a Salesforce job, but I'm struggling. And then they'll take advice from people who also haven't landed Salesforce jobs. And they'll go, I'm really struggling too. I think this is a scam. And it's like, you took advice from other people who haven't done it. Like, why are you doing that? So I will say this to everyone listening. If you're hearing Trevor's story and you're going, man, this is awesome, I want to make $200,000. Please do not go try and get advice from people who aren't making $200,000. Because the first thing somebody's going to tell you that is 15, 20 years into their career, and they're still making 130K, and you say, I want to make 200, they're going to say, that's impossible. You can't do it. I haven't been able to do it. You can't do it either. And if you do, it's because you got lucky. And that is not the truth. And people who have made it there will give you the steps, and they'll say, this is how you get there. And the people who haven't made it there do not have the ability to give you the steps to get there. So I would just say, when you're taking advice generally in life, take it from people who have actually accomplished the thing that you're looking to accomplish. And I would strongly advise ignoring the people who tell you you can't do something, or even influence you to believe that you're limited in what your abilities are to do something. So that would be my takeaway advice here.
And if you don't have anyone in your network you can ask, head over to talentstacker.com/CAP for the Career Accelerator Program. Because all that stuff Trevor talked about, not knowing LLC, setting up contracts, like, oh my God, what do I do? That is all laid out step by step in the Career Accelerator Program. Just throwing it out there, if you don't have any friends who, you know, make a cool $250,000 just like nothing yearly.
And there is one guy I know for sure has accomplished your goal if you're looking to do that. And that would be Trevor. So Trevor, if you don't mind sharing with us, how can people get in contact with you if they want to ask you a couple questions, if that's all right?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, since we, you know, connected a while back, I actually just completed the paperwork to sign up for the Talent Stacker Mentor Program. So once you guys have a chance to review that, I'd love to give back to the community. The community has always been there for me and happy to help anybody out any way I can.
That is amazing. Well, thank you for being on. I actually accepted your mentorship application right before we hopped on. So check your emails. And for anyone who's looking to select Trevor as their mentor, head over to trailblazermentorship.com and get your application in to be a mentee for our next upcoming cohort. If you are enjoying the show and looking to start a Salesforce career, please head over to talentstacker.com/start for the free 5-day challenge. And on whichever platform you're listening to this podcast on, please go ahead and leave us a 5-star review. We really appreciate those. And until next time.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today. To get started for free on your own Salesforce career, go to talentstacker.com/start or check the show notes. There you'll find all the resources you need to start earning $60,000 to $80,000 in as little as 8 months, no matter your education or career background. The Salesforce for Everyone podcast was produced by Edmund T. and engineered by Andrew Mendonza. If you like what we do at this scrappy can-do podcast, please help others find us by leaving a 5-star rating and a great review on whichever platform you're listening to us right now. See you next time.